When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
I am Madison Timmons.
I'm Chris Susi.
And we're paranormal specialists who live in the most haunted city on Earth, Savannah, Georgia. Every day is Halloween in our line of work, so join us as we spin true tales of haunts, murders, and disturbing Savannah history. I'm Madison.
I'm Chris.
And welcome to the most haunted city on Earth.
Beat 'em up, bop, boom.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of The Most Haunted City on Earth. My name is Madison Timmons.
I'm Chris Susi.
And today we are live on Zoom in Waverly Hills with Miss Tina Mattingly. Tina, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hello, everybody. I'm Tina Mattingly. A lot of people do call me Lady Waverly. Been here a long time, but I'll be here haunting it after I'm gone from here too. So come see me now and come see me then.
I love that. Well, actually, that's a pretty fitting name for you, Lady Waverly.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, Tina, thank you so much for joining us today and showing us a little bit around. Tina was kind of showing us around the property via Zoom before we got started. So we've seen the body chute. We saw the morgue. Well, you're currently in the morgue, right?
Yes, I am in the morgue right now.
And those are the body trays behind you?
Body trays are behind me right here. And body slab tables are over here.
Just casual you know, Friday morning.
Where they keep the bodies. That's it.
Yeah. I know some girl come up here the other day and she said, hey, I drove my hearse. And I just looked at her like, okay.
So, and?
I looked like it was something that, you know, I wouldn't think anything, you know, that I would think something was really wow. And I looked at her and said, did you see mine out there?
I love it. Matching hearses.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Nice. Okay, well, let's get started with, I guess we'll ask, how did you acquire Waverly Hills?
It was for sale and we bought it.
Easy enough.
Like those things. Yeah, we didn't inherit it or anything like that. It was in dismay, badly. It had been sitting here open to the vandals and the elements for over 20 years. And there wasn't a window left in the place. It was full of garbage. All the copper, anything of any value was already ripped out of it. Every toilet, almost every sink, every tub, walls, you know, just anything where they could get the copper out, they just busted it. And it's a shame. But we've been working on it. We bought it in 2001. And we've been working on it ever since. And we just finished last week. Getting all the rest of the windows in of the building. There's a window in every window opening.
Wow.
And that's a lot of windows. Don't ask me how many. At one point, I think I did know, but I have lost count, so I don't know anymore. The only ones we have, there's just a few up on the wards on the fifth floor that we're working on them now, so... We'll have them done. And I know the last couple of years they had some black plastic up on the windows and they just made a lot of noise. And, you know, it's very disruptive to, you know, to investigations. And we're not the ones who put that up, but we don't want to get into that. But yeah, it's we're working every day And every time I walk in some part of the building that we have restored, and then I walk into where it's not, then it just reminds me of what it can look like again. It can be done with a lot of hard work, dedication, and a lot of money. And everybody that comes, and everybody that comes here to visit, it's not just us restoring this building, it's them. The people that come and go on the tours and do the investigations. And I like to say, and I think this is the God's honest truth, the residents of this building that are still here are restoring this building. They're having people come and people keep coming. And that money's going back into the building. And it's getting, Waverly's restoring itself, is what it's doing. So it's a beautiful big, you know, piece of history, American history, national, international, whatever you want to call it. It needs to be here for future generations, and we're going to see that that happens.
Absolutely. I mean, just from when y'all were, when you were walking around, y'all were hard at work. It seemed like there was just every corner
of
somebody.
You know, me and my husband, Charles, when we first bought it, it was just us up here. And, of course, over time, you know, we got people to come up and join in. We didn't have the money. We spent everything we had just buying the property, and it took us a long time. And, but now we have workers, and me and him, he still works a lot. He's, you know, but, and I do too, but we're getting older. So that really hard work that we've done the last 20 years has taken a toll on us. So, We got to get other people to help, and we'll just have to pay them to do it, you know? So, yeah, we're generating jobs.
Exactly. And I was going to ask, for the paranormal side of things, we talk about a lot how sometimes when there's restoration or construction being done on a property that has resident spirits, that there is often an uptick in activity. Do you think it's gotten more active since y'all started restoring it to how it used to be?
Well, that's kind of a hard question for me to answer, because I hear and see things quite often, and I don't think I pay as much attention as I used to. I think you get kind of used to your surroundings, and, you know, I mean, every now and then it gets very strong, and then sometimes you think, man, there's nothing going on here at all. But I know when we have our haunted house and we have some big events going on, you have a lot of people coming in the building, it does tend to pick up, yes. And we've had workers that just can't handle it sometimes, and they just don't work here anymore. You know, some people, you know, they just can't handle that. It scares them. But I tell people all the time, don't be afraid of the dead. Be afraid of the living.
That's true.
I am not afraid of the dead at all. And, but I am afraid of a lot of living people. So.
That is a motto to live by.
Yeah. Yeah, I've learned. I'll be 65 years old next month. So, I've been around the block a few times.
That's better.
Yeah.
Now, I was going to ask, so we're going to kind of take this interview floor by floor, because it seems like every floor kind of has its resident spirits attached to it, or certain activities that people encounter. So let's start out with the first floor. Now, the first thing that I've been dying to ask you is, I read a book, I believe it was called Waverly Hills, The History and the Hauntings.
And that's not our book.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It came obvious.
I have not read it.
Well,
I have not read it, so you can tell me. You can tell me about it.
Yeah, that's fair. You're not missing out on a ton. No offense, but that somebody did mention in that book that when at some point you and your husband found a homeless man and his dog with their eyes gouged out in the elevator shaft.
Oh my Lord! I'm glad I did not read that book. That is not true.
Okay.
That's the first time I've heard. I do know of a homeless man. I do know of a dog, but I did not find them gouged out. That's not the story.
Okay.
That shows they did not speak to me. That shows they didn't. I can share the story. Now, when we bought the property, of course, there was a lot of things and lots of stories that we didn't even know about when we purchased the property. We found out things as we, you know, went on. And I did not know the story about the homeless man and the dog when we purchased the property. I didn't know nothing about it. But one day I was in the building. We had some tours going on. And that's when we started. We was just doing very small tours. And there was part of the roof wall, the paraffin wall, that people had busted off. I mean, people came from sledgehammers just trying to destroy the building. But they didn't. It still stood strong. But somebody had radioed me and said, Tina, somebody's got people too close to that, you know, that wall that you don't like people going out to. And I said, oh, okay. And I couldn't get anybody else on the radio. So I went up onto, went up all the way up to the fifth floor, got up there. And I don't know if I'm going to be able to walk this building, guys. My knee just gave out. But it did. I got up and it just popped. But anyway, I got up to the fifth floor and nobody was there. And I thought, well, I missed the tour. So I came down to the fourth floor and I caught up with the tour group. I talked to them. And then I didn't want to disturb the tour any longer. So I went to the third floor where I knew nobody was at that time. So I went down to the third floor. I'm walking. I come out of the stairwell. I take a left. As soon as I take a left, I see a tall, thin man standing there. I see a silhouette of a man perfectly. He was tall, thin. It looked, he had long, frizzy hair. He had on a trench coat. And at first, my thoughts always go to somebody's in here. It's not supposed to be. Or somebody's got loose from the tour and got lost. And so all of a sudden he wasn't there. And I thought he backed into this one room, I thought. And so I started saying, okay, if you got loose from the tour, you're not in trouble. Just come on out and I'll catch back up with the tour. But I didn't remember seeing anybody on the tour that looked like that. So then I said, well, and if you've gotten in the building without, you know, you're not supposed to be in here. You need to come on out with me now so we can go out, and, you know, take you out of the building. And somebody came out. And so I'm thinking this time, okay, somebody's in here. They can hurt me, you know, before anybody could ever get down here to me on phones. I couldn't get anybody on radio. So I started walking down the hallway. I thought I'm just going to leave and go tell security about it. As I'm walking down the hall, I see a white dog laying in the floor, just laying there like it was asleep. It looked like a small white German Shepherd. And anybody that knows me knows that I'm afraid of dogs that I don't know. And I just stopped and somebody would have thought I was crazy. I started going, here, puppy. And of course, then same with the man. I didn't see it disappear or anything. It just wasn't there anymore. So at that point, I'm like, okay, I'm ready to get out of here. So I left, left very quickly, came out of the building, probably pretty forcefully. And somebody grabbed a hold of me as I came out of the building and said, Tina, hey, hold on. What's going on? And I said, I wouldn't even care about the guy anymore. I said, is there such a thing as a ghost animal, dog? And this person started laughing at me. Well, I thought they were laughing at me, but they weren't laughing at me. But they said, was it a white dog? And I said, yes. And he just started laughing even harder. And I'm like, I won't say what I said. Told him to kiss something, and because I thought they were making fun of me, and I just walked off. Well, that day ended, and a few days later, somebody came up, this person, I'm not going to name any names, and they said, I think I can explain what you saw in the building. And I said, well, good luck, you know, good luck with that. And he said, well, I done some research. I know a friend that was a police officer. He said years ago, they didn't give me the year. They said they found a homeless man and his dog in the elevators, third floor elevator shaft where I was at up here, and they were dead. And he said that they couldn't release any of the details because juveniles were involved.
Hmm.
And I said, okay. And he asked me to describe what I saw again. And I told him about the tall, thin man, trench coat, white dog, looked like a German Shepherd, long frizzy hair. And he said that I described them to a T.
Wow.
And I never knew none about it. Yeah. That's for as my. And I mean, you know, I was here, it happened to me, and then whatever's in that book, if that what you said is in that book, that's just that I never said that. That's not true.
So, that's fair.
Yeah. No, and
honestly, that's even creepier.
Yeah, honestly.
That you had a full bodied apparition experience with a
technically two.
Two, yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? It's crazy because, well, that's been a long, been years ago. And, you know, nobody's an expert. I mean, I've had people tell me that they're paranormal experts, and I just, well, I'm the one laughing on the other end of that one. I just tell them, well, you really look good for a dead person.
I like
because
that.
Because in my opinion, you can't be an expert unless you're dead. Or, you know, I mean, a lot of people have their own experiences, their own beliefs, their own thoughts, you know, on everything. But I'm not an expert. But when it comes to this building, I've been here so long, the happenings that's happened to me and a lot of other people, I do know a lot about that. So, but doesn't mean I'm an expert. I'm not a paranormal expert.
You kind of categorize all of your experiences.
Right.
I do.
Yeah.
I do. And, you know, I don't, as soon as somebody says something, oh my God, you know, we got this in there. And I'm going to tell you if it's moisture in your photo or what I think it is, you know, it's, it takes a lot for me to say that that's paranormal. I'm not one of those that everything I hear or see is going to be paranormal. And honestly, it's few and far between when you catch things, you know? So, and over the 20 something years that I've been here, I have seen a lot and we have captured quite a bit. And, but it's, like I said, not everything is paranormal. Not every sound, every smell, every, you know, thing you feel or see or touch or hear is not always paranormal.
Well, so, exactly.
Yeah. It's getting hot here. I'm burning up.
It's a nice sunny day there. So
yeah, I would like to take you all on a walk, but I'm telling you, I just, my knee went out on me just now.
That's okay.
Stay comfortable. Don't.
Yeah. I'm not even moving.
That's okay. You don't need to move. We are good where we are. Yeah. That is a creepy enough background where you are.
We're going to be crawling all over that building with cameras in.
Yeah. I'm in the morgue.
Or a week.
I'm in the morgue hallway.
5 days.
Right. Yeah. What date is it?
The 24th
is when we're going to be there.
24th. Okay. Mm-hmm. I knew it was somewhere. I was pretty sure when it was, but you know, well.
Do you have a favorite story of Waverly or a story that really stands out to you?
The one when somebody asked me, this happened years and years and years ago, but the one that sticks out in my mind the most, and it's because that I know, I didn't know what it was at first. I actually thought it was a real person. After it was all over, I realized that it was a spirit, and they looked at me and I looked at them. We saw each other, and it's only happened to me one time.
And where is
that? And that was over here in the morgue wing. And I was had some workers in here. I'm going to try and get over here and sit down. My knee is really killing me now. Yeah, I'm limping. Sorry.
No, you're okay.
But I don't know what I did. I got up. My knee popped on me, and that did it. Okay. I have a problem with that knee anyway. But I had some workers up here. It was when we first bought the building, and there weren't any doors on the building. They were just all boarded up. Everything was boarded up. And the workers got here before I did. And when I pulled up, they already had the boards off the morgue hallway. And the other one, the father, was over and taking measurements on the door. And I'm standing there talking to them. And as I'm talking to them, a man walked up behind the guy that was at the table saw, looked me straight in the eyes, turned and walked down the hallway. Well, I have rules up here. You don't bring anybody to work with you unless you get it approved with us. And they had never brought anybody with them before. And when I seen this person, I was like, I said, who was that? And the guy that I was talking to at the table saw, he scared this place anyway. He just starts looking around and by who, what, where, what? I said, well, there was a man that just walked up behind you. Did you all bring somebody with you to work today? And he said, well, yeah, you know, his dad. And I said, well, no, I see him. And I said, okay, somebody's in the building. Somebody's in here. So I ran past him, ran down the hallway. Well, each hallway has doors, and we had them locked. And I came to two double locked doors, and there was nowhere this person could have went. Nowhere this person could have got in. And I just stood there, and I said, oh, my God. And then I realized there was nobody here. And I mean, I seen this person. He looked at me, and I looked at him. And if I had a picture of him, I would know who he was. That's how clear I saw him. And he was probably about maybe 40-ish. I saw from, like, the guy that I was talking to was tall, so I only saw part of this apparition behind him. And he had on a plaid shirt. He had on a ball cap, but didn't have any writing or anything on it. And he had on glasses. And I stood there, and I thought, was there something different? I mean, then I started running through my mind. And I thought, I should have heard him, because there's a lot of debris in that hallway at that time. And I'm like, I should have heard him walking on all that, but I never heard anything. All I did is he looked at me, and I looked at him, and he turned and walked down the hall. And I have not seen him since. Never found anybody up here. And I don't know who he was. But that's the most amazing thing, I think, because we looked at each other. We looked into each other's, you know, our souls kind of just met there for a second. And then he just took and walked away. That was it. So to me, that's amazing that we actually, you know, you go places, you hear things, you see things, you're not sure if they see you. But I know that we saw each other. So to me, that's just amazing. That veil was that thin for just a second there, that we saw each other.
Now, was this kind of soon after you purchased the property, or?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, because we didn't even have any doors up yet. We had, the guys were here to put doors up on the openings of the dock and stuff out here. And, you know, it wasn't long. The place was still a mess. It wasn't all cleaned up. Like I said, there was still a lot of debris in the hallways. And when I ran it through my mind, I should have heard anybody walk up that hallway. And when I sat and thought about it, I didn't hear anything. Mm. So to me, it was a spirit. And because I never found anybody, there was nowhere he could have went, nowhere he could have came from. They didn't bring him with them. And I didn't hear him. And when I, you know, trickle down all that and think about everything, and that's when I came to my conclusion that it was a spirit. It was not a real, a live person. So to me, that's the most amazing thing since I've been here that I've seen. Wow. And I don't think there's going to be anything much else that can top that. I've heard and seen lots of things, but I've never had, you know, where I felt like we looked at a spirit, we looked at each other at the exact same time. And to me, I don't know too many people that can say that.
Right.
Nobody else has ever told me that.
It's very rare for spirits to actually acknowledge people back.
Yeah. It's just as rare for them to see us as it is for us to see them.
Mm-hmm. A part of me
wonders. It's like I think all the time when I'm in here, you know, like if we see something, I mean, they're probably, they don't even know that we see them. And vice versa. They could be some spirit in here right now that sees me, but I don't see them.
Exactly.
And like I said, that to me at the exact same time, and we pretty much, without saying anything, we acknowledged each other just by looking at each other. And I mean, to me, you know, they don't have a physical body being anymore. So to me, it was like our souls connected, because I can't connect with their real eyes anymore. You know, they don't have a body.
So, exactly.
Yeah. So to me, it was just, I will never be able to explain that. And I could just keep going on all day about it, because any things that I can't explain, I just rattle on. So, yeah.
It's understandable.
Yeah.
a part of me wondered if it was kind of a fresh spirit, if you will.
Oh, sure.
You know, someone who passed recently or who had come through while it was derelict and maybe died recently after.
I know. Maybe, you know, when I ran through his clothing, you know, it could have been anything that anybody could wear, you know, now too. But because I kept thinking, did it look really different? It was faded. His clothes looked faded or fuzzy. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they weren't bright. And he wasn't bright. And like I said, after it was all over with, I realized he did look different. But I didn't realize it at the time. He was kind of, it's hard to say. I mean, I could see it in my mind, but kind of like he was clear to me, you know, that I could see very clearly. But he was like a real soft light to him. You know, am I saying this? I can't explain it.
No, I completely understand what you're saying.
Glow, kind of like a little bit of a glow.
Sure.
And it was a soft light. It wasn't nothing bright. It wasn't, and made him kind of look kind of not fuzzy, but it's just really hard. If you don't see it, it's really hard to explain.
It's almost like they're out of focus a little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit out of focus. There you go. Yeah. But we looked at each other. I mean, to me, it's just amazing. And I'll never be able to explain it fully.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Another spirit I wanted to ask you if you've ever encountered, or I'm sure somebody, if it is there, you know, somebody's talked about it there. I've read multiple stories of people encountering a spirit of a woman, an elderly woman who has chains and is bleeding on her wrist down on the first floor.
No, I've never encountered that. And I've heard that story. And I do know of a story that's true that kind of, you know, things just get told. It's like somebody whispered something in your ear and then somebody passed it on. And if by the time it gets around the table there, it's totally different, you know. But I do know that there was a nurse that worked here. I don't know her name, and I wouldn't tell you if I did. I don't throw out their names out there because they probably still have family somewhere. And, I don't disrespect people. But she supposedly worked in the lab, and she was supposed to get married to her fiancé, or somebody broke, you know, off the engagement with her or something. She got very upset. And I heard that she actually did slit her wrist up here. And that they did wrap her wrist, and that they did save her. But she ran out the front door screaming. And that's the story I got from some people that used to work here a long time ago. And but she made it. You know, she lived. So I think that's where that story's come from. I have never seen a spirit come out the front door wrapped in chains and bleeding. No, I have not.
Right.
And people, I don't know what it is about people who want to just, I don't know, embellish and make things horrible. And, you know, I don't quite understand that. I tell people all the time, I don't think there's anything here bad. I do think there may be some spirits that are unsettled, but I don't think they're evil. I don't think they're demonic or anything like that. And I know we're all adults here, so I'll just say what I normally say. There is a spirit here in the lobby. It's a male figure. I have ran and had dealings with this before with this spirit. I haven't seen it. I have heard it on many occasions. It gets very loud. And if you get recordings, and it's crazy because everybody that comes here gets the same thing out of him. And so I tell people, I think it's maybe if you're an asshole in life, maybe you're an asshole in death.
Yes.
Makes sense.
So I think this spirit's an asshole, and he doesn't have respect for women. Mm-hmm. He calls women nasty names. I won't tell you the names. We'll just see if you get it when you get here. And I'll write them down for you, and I'll hand it to you. There's some pretty nasty names. I think you could probably think of some pretty nasty names that women don't like. And he's very good at using those. So I think it's maybe because maybe back in, this is just my opinion, maybe back in the day, you know, women were to be seen and not heard. But anybody, woman in some type of authority, a lot of men back then didn't like it. And I think he's one of those. And I just think he's, like I said, I think he's an asshole. He's ran me out of there a few times, but he can't do it anymore, and he knows it.
Good.
Well, good.
I tell him, I'm like, when he gets really loud, a lot of banging, and I've got a lot of recordings when I've been in there. One time, me and some friends went in there. We run a haunted house every year for Halloween. That's one of our biggest fundraisers for the building. And I had been working the night before in a ticket booth that it's in the old ambulance entrance that we had made in the front lobby area. And a couple of guys said that they would come in and help me clean it up because I had been in there by myself. And I mean, I got busy. And I mean, I tore that place up. It was a mess. And so we had to open that night. So they said, "Help, Tina, we'll go in and we'll help you clean it up." And I'm like, "Oh gosh, thank you." You know, so we go in there and one of my friends says, "Hey, can I take my recorder in there while we're cleaning up?" And I said, "I don't care." So he brought it in and I had an old antique table that my great-great-grandfather made sitting in the lobby. And he set it was all the way on the other side of the room. And it's a really big room. He set the recorder on the table. I came over to the ticket area, cleaning it up. It's over there recording the whole time. And I'm sweeping, and I'm telling the guys, I'm going, "Gosh, guys, it's really dusty in here. You know, hold your breath, you know, whatever." Well, when we get done cleaning, the guy takes his recorder, and he's listening to it. And you hear me say, "Hey, guys, it's really dusty in here. You know, hold your breath, you know," and right in that recorder. That was all the way across the room. And I said, in the recording, I had said, one of the guys had said, "Yeah, we might get tuberculosis." He was just being silly. And in the recording, you hear us say all that. And then you hear a male voice say, "Yeah, yeah, yeah," three times. And there was three of us in that room. And we just looked at each other. And one of the guys went, "Oh, hell no." And one of them started screaming, "Does that mean we're going to get tuberculosis?" And I said, "No, it doesn't." I said, "It's just somebody messing with us." So anyway, that's some of the things that can happen in the lobby. And, it's kind of funny. A lot of people get scared out of there. I've been in there working, like I said, for the haunt. I've been in there at night, 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning, all by myself, decorating and doing things. And I mean, the banging starts and it's loud. And it's like somebody's just, I mean, pounding on walls or something. And one night I was in there and it started that. And like somebody was throwing stuff across the room and there was nobody in there but me. And I finally, that was one night. I said, "You know what? I'm tired. You want it? You got it." So I just left. But like, I won't leave anymore if I don't want to.
Well, it's your building.
That's a lot of... That's my worker going on back here. So yeah, I won't let them scare me out anymore. Now I first got here, some of it was pretty strong and I didn't know how to handle it. And I can't tell people how to do this. I have no idea how to tell you. It has to come natural to you. I don't let them in. You know, a lot of people let them in, and I've seen it. I've seen things get in people. I've seen people's eyes turn black. I've seen people drop to the floor. And for some reason or another, I don't know how I do it, but I have learned how not to let them in. And I tell people all the time, you have to be careful what you think and what you say. I had another example when we first got up here. We had a fifth wheel trailer sitting up here. To go to. We had one pole that had electricity on it. We had an extension cord going to that trailer. And it was just somewhere, there was hardly no electric. We bought it. We got one pole put up and no water or anything. But we had this trailer just to go to rest, you know, when we got tired. And one day I went in this trailer. We got rid of the trailer. I don't know if it was the trailer or something up here, but it wasn't good. I didn't like it. I went in the trailer to lay down, and I was laying on my left side. I had a little Yorkie at the time, Princess. She was with me for 17 years. But I was laying on my left side, and I heard a snapping, popping, cracking noise. And it was coming from behind me. And I turned, I rolled over, and I looked, and I saw this big ball of light. And it had electrical arms shooting off of it. And I tell you what, it scared the hell out of me. And I went to get up out of that bed to get out, and something knocked me back down on that bed. And I mean, I could not move. And whatever it was had a hold of me. And I remember thinking in my mind, what are you? What do you want? And, you know, I mean, I couldn't move. And I think that's what happens. I think a lot of times people think things, and it leaves yourself open to all this. And I fought so hard. This sounds crazy. I fought so hard to get out of there that all of a sudden, and nobody would understand this unless this has happened to them. But all of a sudden, I was out of that trailer, but I didn't have my dog. It was so bright outside that you couldn't stand the bright light. And I stood there, and everything, there was no sound, but I was standing outside. And I thought, oh, my God, where am I? I mean, it was like I didn't know where I was. I was still inside. My physical body was still inside that trailer. I had fought so hard to get away from whatever it was that I think I left my body for a minute. And I don't know how I got back in it, but all of a sudden I was back inside the trailer.
Wow.
And after that, I could get up and I went out and that's it. I'm never going in that trailer ever again. I'm done. And then we had some guys that came up, was doing security. They started staying in it and things was happening to them too. So I'm like, you know, let's get rid of it. So, let's just get rid of it, because it didn't feel comfortable. You know, it was just something not right. And we got rid of it. Of course, things still happen up here, but not in that trailer because it's not here anymore.
One less thing.
I want it.
One less thing. Exactly.
Those are just some things. Yeah. You know, it's just some things you can't explain. And you know, I hadn't had nothing like that happen to me anywhere else. So I really can't say if it had ties with that trailer, if it had ties with up here. But it was up here that it happened. So
I got to ask you, though, about seeing somebody's eyes go black, because I read somebody's experience, because there was I don't know if you've been on Reddit anytime recently, but there's a Reddit thread of people who have experiences in Waverly Hills, and people just, you know, write out their stories or things like that. And somebody said that they worked in the haunted house, and somebody got hit with something and their eyes turned black. So when you said that, I was like, I wonder if that was the same experience.
I don't think so. You know, I don't want to scare people off from coming here because, you know, I want them to continue to come. And, you know, that's few and far between that's happened. And that's why I tell people they got to be careful, not only right here, but everywhere, you know, of playing with things that, you know, like to say, if you play with fire, you're going to get burnt. Well, it's the same thing with playing with the spiritual world. I think if you don't know what you're doing, you shouldn't be doing it. And it's not nothing to play with. Now, I don't come in this building and I call out nothing. I just don't do it, and I don't allow it here either. You know, everything has to be respectful, provoking. I don't mind if people come in and talk, but not try to conjure anything up or anything like that. I don't allow seances, Ouija boards, or anything of that sort. And what I'm telling you with the person that turned their eyes turned black, and they said that this has never happened. This person had a very high profile job, and you wouldn't think it would be anything it would, you know, this type of person would happen to, or I don't think it matters who or what you are, but they were on a tour and they got something just got to them.
Wow.
And they just, you know, their eyes turned black and they went down to the ground. They got caught and they didn't remember anything. That doesn't happen that often. And you don't want that to happen. And I don't want to scare people off from coming here, but, you know, just I think some people are more in tune with things than others. And some people are just more open to things. So, I mean, I can't say for sure, like I told you before, I'm no expert, but that doesn't happen that often. So,
well, that's the interesting thing. And don't worry about our listeners, if anything, that'll make them want to go more.
But I don't want people to think it's something evil, because I can't say that it is, you know?
Sure.
So, I mean, nothing. My opinion on things that are evil, if there was something evil here, somebody would have gotten hurt by now. And nobody gets hurt. If you get hurt, you got hurt running. You hurt yourself, you know, because you got scared and took off and done something silly. But I've never seen anything, nothing evil. I don't believe that there's anything like that here. So
well,
people like to dream. They like to, you know, I don't know why people want to go there. You know what I'm saying? It's like they want that to be, but then if something was to happen, that would be when they wouldn't want it anymore.
Exactly.
I don't want that. So
now on the second floor, we also found an entity that somebody referred to as the Creeper. Are you familiar with the Creeper? Okay.
I am. And it's not only the second floor. That can be anywhere.
Comforting.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's what I've seen. I think it's one and the same. There's something here that I call Big Black.
Yep.
And right. Some people say the Creeper. I think it's kind of one and the same to me.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It may not be, but to me, it I think it is. I've seen it. I've been in it. And I can tell you another really awesome story that happened to me. I came in here with a friend of mine. He was up here helping do security. He's a big guy. And we were actually on the second floor when this happened. And we saw it was at daytime. It was right before dusk. And we looked down the hallway, like I had you all up there a little while ago with that shot of the hallway. Mm-hmm. But we were looking down the hallway, and something caught our attention. And we noticed the hallway was turned black, and it was moving forward toward us. But it wasn't dark outside yet. It was like just like coming very slowly. It was like coming. And all of a sudden, I couldn't see anything. It was black. And I don't know how long it lasted. When I talked to this person afterwards, they told me that I was totally gone. But anyway, it was just total darkness. Well, then all of a sudden, I can see this person that was standing next to me. And he said, "You didn't hear me, did you?" And I said, "I'm sorry. Did you say something?" Because he was standing right next to me. And he said, "Tina, you were gone. You were in total blackness. I couldn't see you. I couldn't find you." And I said, "Yeah, it got really dark." He said, "But I wasn't in the darkness. You were." And I said, "Oh." He said, "Did you not hear me? I kept yelling for you." And I said, "Well, no, I'm sorry. I didn't hear you." If he hadn't been with me when this happened, I wouldn't have known what happened. I still really don't know what happened, but I wouldn't have known that I couldn't hear while I was in there. And he was standing right next to me. And he said, "I kept calling your name." He said, "Finally, I said, get away from her and leave her alone." And he said, "Then you were here."
Interesting.
And I said,
"Very interesting."
Well, I thought I was here the whole time. But I thought I was just in darkness. And now when he said to me, I don't really know where I was at. He said it was like I was just gone. But wherever I was at, it was just dark and quiet. I mean, you couldn't hear nothing. You couldn't see anything. But I wasn't afraid. I didn't feel fear. And so I don't not quite don't know what that is. I call that big black. But I've seen things come from the floor and go up the walls. I've seen them go across the ceiling. I've seen shadows grow really big, tall. And that's what I think some people call the creeper, because it'll be like on the floor and then it'll kind of creep up, you know, go up the walls. And I don't know, in my opinion, that they're one and the same, but I could be wrong.
No, it would make sense.
If anybody's got their opinion. Yeah, if anybody's got an opinion on that, let me know. But,
well, yeah. You know, spirits oftentimes can only form as much as they are available at the time, you know,
right.
Dependent on who is interacting with them. So there are some people who catch just traces of them, even though they may be massive and very involved. And some people, you know, just have the innate ability to give the spirit its full spectrum. Because the description you're giving is fascinating, because it sounds like you've got a moving vortex, a being that can actually sort of take you almost like an astral projection, take you out of the physical world by enveloping you. Because we read a story where a woman and her daughter thought they were standing inside this big black entity.
It was like eerily similar to your story.
And I'm like, that sounds like you're dealing with kind of something that might come and go like cycles of the moon. You know, it gets thicker and thicker and thicker as time progresses and gets stronger and stronger and stronger, dependent on the time of year, things like that can have huge effects on it. So it's really interesting. I'm looking forward to kind of like experimenting with the types of energies, because it's also possible that, and we talk about this a lot on our show, is that sometimes spirits, humans, kind of lose their form. You know, you can't see them quite as well. Their details disappear, and they turn into shadows. And when they turn into shadows, it's possible that if you have enough shadow people, they might find comfort in one another and become a larger force. So you might be dealing with a crowd of these shadow figures who create kind of this. Yeah. I knew a person who was doing research on selling your soul to the devil, and one of the stories that kept coming up was that when people tried to court the devil, big plumes of fog would appear, and they would get lost in the fog, and the theory was the fog was actually spirits trying to protect and hide the person from the devil, because the devil couldn't see through the fog. And so there's something very similar of the idea of you being hidden inside this cloud of the shadow, that maybe they were just kind of like they took you as one of their
protecting
own and
me?
Was trying to protect you, right? Trying to hide you from something.
Well, I think they do, because everybody up here, like I told you, a lot of them call me Lady Waverly, but they also, some lady painted a picture and she named it Lady Waverly, and it looked like me. It was like floating outside, even though it was a naked photo, but she just, it's not nasty looking, you know what I'm saying?
Artistic, though? Right.
And she's like, and she's floating outside the building, and she says that I am the building's protector.
I believe that.
I do.
I believe that
I
the spirits would think that, too.
I protect this building with everything. Yeah. So, and then there was another time up on the, on the fourth floor by the OR. The room right next to it, when you come here, maybe y'all can check that out, too. This happened one night. My husband had bought me a night vision goggle, and I was just going around playing with it, looking at everything. And we got up on the fourth floor, and I looked into it, and the room next to the OR, which was just a restroom, shower room area, when I would put the goggle on, it turned black, and it was like sparkles of waterfalls, of a waterfall in front of that doorway. And I was like, I'd take the goggle away, and then I'd put, you know, that all I see was a black, it was dark. And then I would put it back on, and I would see all these sparkles. It looked just like a waterfall. And I'm just like, what is this? And I thought maybe this was some type of a portal or something. I wasn't sure what it was.
Interesting.
But I could look at it with the night vision and see that. And I've taken the night vision outside before. A lot of people don't do this. And this has been years ago. Me and one of the security guards was outside playing with the night vision again. And we were looking at the building, and we looked up at the building. And, you know, the back of the building has all these openings. It never had windows. It was a breezeway where they got fresh air. And it had just big open windows with just copper screens in it. And we would put the goggle on and look up there. And I was looking, and all of a sudden, I didn't say a word. And I looked at the guy that was with me. I said, look through this goggle and tell me what you see when you look at the building. I wanted to see if he's seen the same thing I did. He takes the goggle, puts it up to his eye, and then he just, I mean, he threw it down. And he said, oh, my God. I said, what'd you see? He said, there's people in all those windows. I said, that's what I saw. And I got the goggle, picked it back up, and you'd look up in those openings, and there were just, I don't know how many people, but you could just see their heads. Some of them were short, some of them were tall, some of them looked like little kids. And when you'd look up at there through that night vision, but then when you'd look down, you wouldn't see anything but darkness. But there was nobody in the building.
Oof.
And it was in several of the windows.
That's so exciting to hear because Chris just recently got, what's the ink called?
The Dyson? Dyson.
It's what they originally made night vision goggles with. And then for a long period of time, it wasn't allowed anymore because
it caused hallucinations.
Hallucinations.
Mm-hmm. People say that they would see
Maybe they really weren't hallucinations. Maybe it was real and people just thought it was hallucinations.
Exactly. Oh,
absolutely. And it would be very interesting to look through the windows.
Yeah. We're definitely
you have
going
to go
to
outside
that.
In the dark. And I mean, see, when we first got the place and we got all this, like I said, there was no electricity up here. We were up here on a hill in the middle of nowhere. There was no neighborhoods around us. And it was just total. I mean, you couldn't see your hand in front of your face when it got dark out. And that's how dark it was. Now we have security lights and cameras and all kinds of electricity. So hopefully, I mean, I can't turn all that off, but
no.
Hopefully you'll still be able to see all
it'll
that.
Be enough. Just being out at night. And those goggles do not work in the dark. So we would need a little light.
You have to have a little light for them to work, right?
Right.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah, we're excited. That's super exciting.
Yeah.
And then moving on to the third floor, everybody's favorite ghost, Timmy. Everybody
I'm
loves
blowing all this
ghost.
Out of the water, aren't I? I'm blowing everything out of the water. Timmy, this is what I tell people about Timmy. I do think there are children spirits here. I have heard them and I've seen them. But I tell people, don't make a mistake. Timmy might have been here when somebody came here and they got an EVP with that name in it. But don't make that mistake, Timmy. I don't think he may still be here. He may not. I think there are other children here. Don't hurt somebody's feelings. Don't ask just for Timmy.
That is very fair.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's interesting because I think that people naturally assume that the only children on property were children suffering from tuberculosis, but children of the parents who had tuberculosis were being cared for there. You know, that's a part of that whole system was, well, they can't be at home alone. So while their parents were being treated, there are children just living in the space. And
they had places for them to stay. They couldn't see their parents.
Right, exactly. They had to be isolated, but still.
They had a school and everything for them,
And I think that has a lot of that, what we would call residual hauntings, the idea of there being such a peculiar time. Like those kids' lives, that is a weird upheaval, you know, because that is not normal for children to be brought into an institutional hospital just to live, you know, not because they're being treated, not because they're sick, but because their parents have a highly contagious disease that they're unable to care for their own children.
Yeah. And a lot of times when those parents didn't live, those children ended up in the orphanages.
Exactly.
I've met several of them that, you know, over the years, and they still are like angry, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say, which is enough to leave an imprint. And we talk about this sometimes in our show, that you don't have to be dead to haunt a place. If you had some huge emotional output somewhere, that emotion can remain and can resonate. And some people may pick up on it. They may pick up on a fact that someone grieved terribly right here. And that person could still be alive running around, but actively haunting a place.
That emotion was so strong that it stuck.
Yes.
Yeah. And see, I think that just hits on something that kind of one of my beliefs up here. I tell people all the time, people think that, everybody's got their own beliefs. Like I said, they got their own religion and everything else. But and I've got mine, you've got yours. But there was a lot of hopes and prayers that went out of this place. People coming here. And the emotions were so strong and so high. And then you saying that, that's just one of the things that I think of all the time, that stuff that just doesn't go away. And that's what I tell people, all that hoping and praying and wanting to get well and coming here for that reason. And so many of them in just one place, that I think it just, I tell people all the time, if this building wasn't here, those emotions would still be here. Those spirits or whatever that's here would still be here. It doesn't have to be this building. It's just here in this area. If the building was torn down, I think it would still be going on. Whatever they built up here or anything, if that happened, which we hope we never will, they're going to get the same thing in their houses. If there was houses, there's what was in this building. You know, it's there's people, there's a subdivision down from Waverly that used to be Waverly property. I've known people that's moved in them, and they've called me about the spirits and things going on in their houses. And my daughter, she actually, somebody at her work says, your mom and dad owns that up there, don't they? And my daughter says, yes. She says, will you tell your mother to keep her ghost to herself? And my daughter said, what? My mom, they're not my mom's ghost. That she has no control over that. These people actually moved out of their house because of it. They bought a really nice house and moved out. Yeah. So some people, it's just not, some people just can't handle it, I guess. But it doesn't bother me. I can share. It's not mine anyway. And it's nobody's. It's none of ours. Wherever we're at, it's all on loan anyway, is the way I look at
it. Right. Ghosts aren't on the payroll, is what I always say.
That's right. Exactly.
They don't punch the time clock. They're not going to answer
to
you.
That's right. Yeah. People always say, am I guaranteed to make something going to happen? I'm like, I don't know. I can't tell you something's going to happen. And then you'll have people go, it's really quiet in there tonight. And they'll come and tell me some of the stuff that they've heard or seen. And I just look at them like, he just said nothing was happening. And then you tell me this. What do you want them to do? Walk up to you and say hello and introduce themselves? You know, that people expect I don't know what they expect. But if you get anything, that's amazing.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
If you got 100%. If you got a sound or a glimpse or a recording of anything. And then you get people who come in here and go, oh, and they're happy. They got scratches. And you're like, what? Why do you want scratches? You know,
no.
What happened here? Did I lose you?
No, nope, we're here.
Well, I see you, but something happened here. I don't know what happened.
Frozen?
Weird.
We can hear you fine.
Okay, there it went. It's back.
Okay, perfect.
So
now I was going to ask you about everybody's other favorite area of the building, room 502. I think that's the one people are most curious about, with the kind of tumultuous history that's associated with it.
Right. Well, room 502 is up on the fifth floor. The fifth floor is just two wards on the fifth floor. The roof is very large, but they only had two wards that housed about, I don't know, 16 people on each side. And then they had two nurses' stations, and they had a restroom and a shower room for everybody. I met a man when we was doing a show up here, I invited him up for the show, but I met him one day. I'm not even going to mention his name, but I do on the tours and stuff. I'll tell you who he is. But when I first bought the property, me and my husband got the property, I would see this white pickup truck sitting at the gate, and we get people to sit down there all the time and just take their lunch break. It's by a golf course. You know, when Waverly closed down, the state took and made part of it a golf course, Bobby Nichols Golf Course. They just got a plug. There you go. You're welcome. Anyway, I would see this truck here several times. And finally, this one day, I pull up, and me and this, it was an elderly man, and I just kind of looked over at him, and he looked at me, and we caught eye contact. And I just nodded at him, and I went to open the gate up, and then he says, "Excuse me, ma'am." And I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Are you going up that OTB hospital?" And I said, "Yes, sir, I am." And he said, "What do you got to do with that place?" And I didn't even want to tell him that I owned it because I thought, I'm going to be down here all day. I got to get up there, you know, but yeah. I couldn't be rude. And I looked at him and I said, "Well, I own it, sir." And he just started begging me, "Please don't tear it down, please." And I said, "Well, sir, me and my husband bought the property to try and save the building." And he was just thanking me. "Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you." He said, "You know that I grew up there." He said, "That was my playground." And I said, "What?" He said, "Yeah, my dad and three of my uncles worked up there. And where this golf course is, we used to have a log cabin down here. We lived here." And I said, "Oh my God, really?" And so we stood there for a minute and talked. And well, I asked him, I said, "Would you like to ride up?" And he said, "Oh, could I?" And I said, "Yeah, come on." So I let him go ahead. I mean, he drove like 2 miles an hour all the way up the road. And he was in his late 80s. And we got up here, we talked. And after that, he came back a few times, and he had a guy that he, I don't know if it was a relative of his or whatever, but he had something wrong with him. He would ask me if he could bring him up here, and I'd say, "Sure," you know. And he'd come up, and well, we ended up having a show get a hold of me, and they wanted me to get a hold of somebody that, you know, from up here. So I called him, and I asked him if he would be on the show. And he said, "I don't know about that." He didn't want to go on no camera or anything. And I said, "Well," he says, "well, I tell you what, I'll do it if you're there with me." And I said, "Well, I'll be there." I said, "I might not be on camera with you, but I'll be there right next to you." And he said, "Okay." So he comes up and, excuse me, he's talking to the people. And he told me, he said, "Now, if they ask me something you don't want me to say, you don't want me to answer, you just look at me and nod, and I won't answer that question." And I said, okay. He was a really nice guy. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, they interviewed him. In the middle of all the interviewing, we took a break, and me and him were sitting out there talking at a picnic table that's out here. And I looked at him, his name was Joe, which was it's my son's name too. And I said, "You know what, Joe?" I said, "We hear a lot of stories from up here, and we don't know what's true and what's made up." And he said, "Well, if I know anything, I'll tell you." And I said, "Well, the main thing we hear is about a nurse they found up here hanging on the fifth floor." As soon as I mentioned that, he dropped his head down and wouldn't even look up at me. And I knew it was true just by his reaction. And I said, "So is that true, Joe?" And he said, "Yes, ma'am, it is." And I said, "Well, what do you know about it?" And he said, "Well, you know, they always said, my dad always said, whatever happens on this hill stays on this hill. You're not supposed to talk about it." Mm-hmm. And I found that out from a lot of people that had been here as patients. Nobody ever talked about it after they left here. And I said, "Yeah, I understand that, Joe." And he said, "Well, I guess it's okay if I talk about it now." Because he was a kid when it happened.
Right.
He said that he heard his dad and his mom and his uncles talking in the cabin, and you couldn't help but hear what was going on. It wasn't a very big cabin, he said. And he said, after they got done talking, they realized that the kids probably heard what they were saying. And he said, "My dad walked back here and told me, you know, whatever you hear, you don't never talk about." So, but he said, "But I think it's okay now." And I said, "Okay, Joe." And I said, "Well, what do you know about it?" And he said, "Well," he was very respectful. He said, "She was a young woman that was in trouble, if you know what I mean." And I said, "Yes, Joe, I do know what you mean, but I mean, I just don't understand why she would do something like this. What would make her feel like it was her only option? And he said, well, this was a different day and time. She'd have been shunned by everyone. It was a rumor that she was in trouble with she wasn't married. It was a rumor she was in trouble with a doctor that was married. And I said, I just can't imagine feeling like that was my only option, Joe. And he said, well, she was sick. She also had tuberculosis. And of course, we had read a lot of things. You know, if you were 5 months or less expecting, they would highly suggest you have an abortion. If you were further along, you know, more likely you or the baby weren't going to make it. But, and then he just looked at me and he said, I guess she just didn't see no other way out. And that was all that was said about it. But he said that his dad said that when him and one of his uncles, his dad's brother, came up on the elevator to the fifth floor, when that door opened up, she was hanging in front of the elevator, which room 502 is kind of at off to the left. I think it's just because it was a rounder room with the number on it. I think she was hanging outside of the room.
Right.
And because there's nowhere in that doorway or in that room that anything could have happened. But we do know that it's true. I believe Joe and every word he said. And he verified the story for me. And we did find some records, like when Ghost Hunters was up here. They found some records of three nurses that passed away up here. But they all stated that they died of tuberculosis. And that's what they would have done. They wouldn't have put on that death certificate. I mean, they didn't want stuff like that to get out. They swept things under the rug.
Right.
I mean, nowadays, everybody wants to know all the dirtiest and nastiest stuff about everything. Back then, they tried to cover things up. They wouldn't want the building to get that kind of a reputation. So all of the nurses that did pass here all stated they died of tuberculosis. I'm pretty sure one of them was her, because she did have tuberculosis. So,
right.
That's the story about the nurse on the fifth floor.
Wow. That's amazing that you met somebody who actually remembered it, first off.
I think he said he was only like 9 years old or something when that happened. He was young.
Yeah, he would be.
Yeah. Incredible. And, it started out, it was like four investors went in together to buy Waverly, but then the state ended up, you know, taking it over. And when they did, they bought the property from them and continued to let them live in their homes, their cabins that they had down there. And he said that he never got tuberculosis. He said he played up here all the time because his dad and all of his uncles were up here. He said they would even have movie night and with the patients, but they made them sit in the back of the room. They wouldn't let them go sit up there with the patients.
Sure.
They come up here and watch movies.
So, wow.
Yeah, he said he used to run up down the body chute all the time. You know, the body chute originally wasn't built to take bodies down. It was built to bring materials up here to build this building.
Sure.
And then when they had the, you know, people were dying one after another and they were trying to keep everybody's morale up, well, they started using the body chutes so they didn't have to have a hearses or anything come up here to pick up the bodies, because they were really big about, you know, keeping everybody's morale up, to hoping that they, I mean, how would you feel if you saw hearses up here just constantly?
Right.
You know, you'd be thinking, then the next time I'm going to be in there, you know? And I talked to people, they said that, you know, they were really big on, you know, it was fresh air, sunshine, rest, nutrition was the main thing up here, and to keep their morale up. But they said when they were really, they had to go like take naps at certain times of the day and be in bed by a certain time at night. They said they'd never seen them take a body out of here. They said that they would close all the doors when everybody was taking a nap or gone to bed, and that's when they would move the dead. And they said if they got up in the morning and so-and-so wasn't there, you didn't have to ask. You knew. Mm-hmm. They would just go about their day. It was just like a normal thing. Not that it wasn't sad, but there was nothing they could do.
Right.
Yeah, and they were, you know, everybody was trying to, you know, live too, you know, keep their own morale up so they could go home with their families. And a lot of people did. There was more people that lived than died. But we know we don't have an account. And people's always asking me how many. I'm like, there's no way. We don't know. A lot of those records are lost. A lot of them got, they went down to the health department downtown in the 37 flood. Most of that, them records, you know, they're destroyed. And, but we know that it's in the thousands, but we don't know how many.
Yeah, I caught on to that. I felt like every time I read a article or a book or whatever.
It's going to be a different.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, when we first moved up, when we moved up here, we did live here for about 12 years. I don't live up here now, but, you know, we had everybody throwing numbers at us, telling us, oh, God, this is how many people died here and all this and that. And if you go by the statistics of some of the census that we've read and stuff, I even before this building was built, this is the fourth building on the property, fourth hospital. It just had to keep getting bigger and bigger because tuberculosis was an epidemic. But, you know, there were already thousands that died before this building was even built. And so then this building was built, and it, you know, it housed over 500 patients. So, and at one point, my father-in-law worked here. And actually, in the 37 flood, they had property over, you know, right off Dixie Highway, and they had a farm. It got flooded. Him and his grandfather came up here because they got flooded out of their home. There was no place to go. Waverly was the only thing out of water. So they came up here, and they let him sleep on the x-ray table. Well, he was 17, and he started working here. And he said that they took him, put him to work in the bakery. And one day they sent him down to the first floor loading dock. You know, they were totally self-contained. They had their own livestock and, you know, everything, just chickens, hogs, cattle, raised their own potatoes and tomatoes and everything else. They did whatever they could up here on their own. But every now and then they would get a delivery. And he said they sent him down to the loading dock, I guess to get a bag of flour or something that they would have delivered here. And he passed it up because he didn't know where he was going. And he ended up what we call the auxiliary morgue. It was just a maintenance bay area. That's what it was built for on the first floor. But when it was at its height, they used it for an auxiliary morgue. And he ended up down there, and he said it was, and it's a huge room. And he said it was wall-to-wall bodies. He come running out of there.
Yeah.
No, I'm sure he did.
He said he went upstairs and he said something to him about it. And they said, oh, you went too far down. You got to go out on the dock. But anyway, but he told me when he worked here, he said, Tina, this place was beautiful. He said the floors were so shiny. You could see, they were like mirrors. You could see yourselves in them. And everything was sanitation white. You know, he said, clean, clean, clean. And I said, yeah, I could see that. You know, but there's a lot of stories, and we could talk all day long. I don't know how long y'all's
we were gonna wrap it up with two questions from our listeners. So the first question is, Frenchie asks, do you think the body chute is haunted?
I know the body chute's haunted.
Ooh, yep. Okay.
It is. A lot of people would come here thinking that they, you know, people were passed away. You know, why would anybody be in there? You know, they were already dead when they went down the body chute. Well, I don't think it has anything to do with it. I've seen a lot of stuff in the body chute, and I tell people, don't make a mistake. Spend some time in there. I don't like telling people what happens in there a lot because I suggest to people, I want you to know the building. I want you to know how to get back to safety or back to wherever you need to be. I don't want you getting lost. But I don't like telling them a lot of stories and things that happen because I don't like putting things in people's heads.
Mm.
So when they come here, I tell them that. I think you're better off. We'll tell you how to get back down to here to, you know, like a break area or whatever. And we have cell phones. We have them call us if they get lost or are scared, and they can call us and we'll come get them. And that does happen. But I tell them, go in on your own. Go in blind to start with. See what you get. And then we'll talk about it. Exactly. You know, and, you know, they'll usually get things that we know they're going to get, but we want to know that we didn't stick that in their head. So we usually don't tell them much when they first come in.
That's fair.
Yeah.
And then the second question, Kirk asked, what is your scariest experience?
I think it was that one out there in that trailer.
Oh, sure.
That scared me. Yeah. I didn't know what it was. And I still don't really know what it was.
It sounded like
it was like a big ball of electricity or something.
A ball of lightning, right? There are lots of reports of balls of lightning that kind of like can pass through. People believe that it's because there's a heightened level of negative energy. And, you know, that's how you get lightning is positive electrons crashing into, you know, negative. And people think that can happen in a location and can become very localized. As a matter of fact, I just the other day saw a video of this electric ball coming into a person's house and destroying their TV. But the way it moved was so eerie because it's just like this staticky ball of light. Yes. And it's got like lightning coming off of it. And it
that's how this was.
Yeah. And I think because you almost immediately had what sounded like an out-of-body experience.
I did.
And those two things oftentimes coincide, a huge discharge of negative energy and your spirit being able to leave your body because your body operates on positive energy and your spirit actually deals with negative. So at a heightened level of negative energy, you can actually move your spirit faster than you can move your physical body.
I sure hell did. When I figured out I was not inside with my body, I was wondering, how am I going to get back? Cause I don't know how I got out.
Well, usually you're not untethered. So you'd snap back like a rubber band.
Well, I did. All of a sudden I was just there.
Right.
But while I was thinking it, I was thinking, how am I, you know, I was just confused and scared.
It's terrifying. Sounds terrifying.
It was. But whatever was in there held me down. I couldn't move. And that's when that's when I left my body. I jumped out of it. But then I'm thinking, I don't have my dog. I have to go back and get my dog.
That's sweet.
And because I loved my dog. But all of a sudden I was back in there and I was there with my dog. And I mean, it was crazy. So to me, that was just scary.
Of course.
I don't particularly care. I don't want it to happen again. No, thank you. I don't even know if I would even know how to, I didn't know how to handle that then, and I wouldn't know how to handle it now.
That is fair.
Well, you're here. Yeah. So that,
yep.
It worked
I'm here.
Out. Well, thank you
but
so
you know,
much,
a lot
Tina.
Of people think, you know, I got really sick for a couple years there, and I don't know. A lot of people say, well, maybe it's that place up there. I can't really say that. You know, I can't say it wasn't. I can't say it was.
Right.
But, you know, we worked a lot, and I think it just basically was worn out, and it caused some physical problems.
Sure, absolutely.
So, well, I can't wait to see all y'all.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait to see you and meet you in person. But
yeah,
we're very excited.
I'm sorry I couldn't walk around on my stupid knee gave out.
No.
That's A-okay.
We're more than happy just having this conversation.
Okay, sounds great.
Well, thank you, Tina, and we can't wait to see you in a couple days. And I know all of our listeners are definitely looking forward to this. So thank you for making
some
time.
Thanks, everybody.
All righty.
Thank you.